So you're trying to cut through all the noise, right? Find that piece of knowledge that really clicks. Well, this deep dive might just be what you're looking for. Today, we're getting into a really fascinating and honestly long-hidden bit of history, all thanks to a YouTube video transcript.
That's right. Our main source here is the transcript for episode 43, OLA, Explain Jim Wohl Day 2015. It's from the Military Tales channel on YouTube. And it's basically a recording of a get-together, people who knew or served under Jim Wohl.
Yeah, exactly. Not just, you know, dry facts, but real stories, personal stuff, recollections shared at this event, specifically honoring Jim Wohl and this unit he led.
And what we want to do, our mission for this deep dive, is to really pull out the key things about Jim Wohl's leadership style and also understand what made his unit, they called it OLA, so unique, and, you know, get a feel for what the people who served with him actually went through, especially in Southeast Asia.
A lot of this was kept under wraps for a long, long time.
Oh, definitely. Very secret. So let's start with the event itself, Jim Wohl Day 2015. I mean, the name alone tells you he made quite an impact.
For sure. A whole day dedicated to him. And his wife, Joanne, other family, they were there too. It sounds pretty emotional.
Yeah, the transcript really gives off that vibe, respect, emotion. The organizer calls Jim a hero, someone who did things nobody else did, you know, operating behind the lines. Laos, Cambodia, strong words.
Sounds like putting the event together was tough too. The organizer mentioned some personal issues, but his son stepped in to help.
Right. And they even had this musical tribute with themes connected to Jim Wohl. Apparently, it really hit home for the people there.
You get this immediate sense of, well, deep respect and camaraderie. It really sets the scene for understanding the kind of leader he must have been.
Absolutely. You feel that loyalty straight away.
And we hear that directly from the guys who served under him. One speaker talks about learning so much.
Yeah, he even said he preferred his plane, which apparently wasn't the most popular model, just because it meant being part of the job that was worth doing.
Wow. That really says something about the unit's purpose, the morale Jim built.
It does. And there's another great story that shows the kind of atmosphere Jim fostered. This guy remembers getting chewed out stateside for not saying yes, sir, properly.
Oh.
Yeah, because in Jim's unit, things were apparently more informal. Like, yeah, or you bet was okay. It suggests this real tight-knit, almost band of brothers feel that Jim encouraged.
So leadership wasn't just about rigid rules for him. It was about trust.
Seems like it. Trust and that shared mission. And then you get these accounts of him in action, like the story about the SAR mission for a downed OB-10 in Laos.
Right. I remember reading that bit.
Yeah.
The speaker's own engine starts failing during the pickup.
Exactly. And Jim Wohl, who was leading the SAR that day, he immediately flies alongside him, escorts him in a damaged plane himself, all the way back to Da Nang.
That's incredible. Not just giving orders, but being right there.
Leading from the front, literally. Providing that critical support under, you know, extreme pressure. Another pilot reinforces this. Flew 258 missions in A1s, this guy.
258.
Yeah. And he emphasizes Jim's professionalism, but also that his absolute priority was looking after his people, taking care of his men. That theme just keeps coming up.
And it wasn't just the pilots, right? There was that lieutenant.
Yeah. Jim personally made sure he could travel with the group he was supposed to be with. Seems like a small thing, maybe, but those acts of consideration, they build serious loyalty.
Totally. And maybe the ultimate compliment came from the commander who took over from Jim briefly.
Oh, yeah. What did he say?
He said Jim's setup was so good, so effective, he didn't change a damn thing.
Wow. Okay, that speaks volumes about how well Jim had built and run that unit.
So this unit, OLA, definitely not your standard outfit. The secrecy around it was intense.
Intense is the word. They were apparently held to the same secrecy standards as, like, ASOG teams. We're talking a potential 20-year prison sentence if they talked within that 20-year time frame.
And people were actually proud of keeping it secret for so long.
Yes, there's a real sense of pride mentioned. The fact that almost nothing was known about OLA publicly, just like one tiny mention in some book about A1s, they saw it as proof of their dedication, the importance of what they did, and their families kept quiet too.
Their missions, just inherently dangerous. Laos, Cambodia, behind enemy lines, supporting ground teams, search and rescue.
Yeah, one speaker calls them missions to die for. That really hammers home the risk they faced, probably daily.
And doing all this with, what was it, half a squadron of resources?
Yeah, stretched thin. The operational tempo must have been relentless. Supporting those MACV SOG teams, that was a huge part of their job. Very direct support for some highly classified ground ops.
And the rules of engagement between late 69 and 72, flying incredibly low.
50 feet above the trees sometimes. Flying in the weeds, they called it.
Which just highlights the danger, but also the skill needed for that kind of close air support.
Exactly. And we learned that around November 69, their focus shifted a bit. Less heavy bombing, more towards that close air support and rescue role. Adapting.
And the whole reason OLA existed in the first place.
It sounds like it came down to MACVSO basically insisting on it. They needed dedicated air support they could rely on for their own very sensitive missions.
So OLA was absolutely critical for some of the most secret operations of the war.
No doubt about it. Their unique capabilities were essential.
Okay, let's get into that specific mission story. The rescue of the A4 pilot, Pete Schwanz, near Chipuan. This really highlights Jim Wold's leadership.
Right. Schwanz ejects at night. He's alone, hostile area, very bad situation.
And Jim Wold, he's on call, might even have been sick that morning.
But he takes the mission himself, and instead of going in with a big force, he goes with just one other A1 and two Jolly Green helicopters. They called it a snatch and grab.
Talk about calculated risk. Shows his personal involvement, doesn't it? Not just directing traffic.
Absolutely. His first job, find Schwanz, mark his position. Schwanz remembers a white marker rocket landing way too close for comfort.
Huh. Close call. And then Jim leads the rescue helicopter right into this dangerous zone near Chafan.
Single-handedly escorts it in. They flew directly over an enemy gun pit that somehow was empty at that moment. Just pure luck, maybe.
Unbelievable.
The transcript mentions fog on the river might have helped cover them, too. Adds to the drama of it all.
And the payoff. Schwanz thanks Jim later. And Jim apparently confirms he took the mission even though he was sick because...
That's what real men do. Pretty powerful statement about his code, his ethos.
Definitely sets a standard. The transcript also mentions other planes nearby, gas birds with tear gas.
Yeah, suggesting maybe a bigger support effort was ready or maybe staged slightly differently. It hints at the complex tactics involved. Schwanz, by the way, was so grateful. He threw two parties for everyone involved in the rescue.
You can understand why. It's an incredible story of dedication.
It really is. Shows the lengths they go to leave no one behind.
So how did OLA actually get started? Officially formed around New Year's Day after the 62nd detachment closed.
That's the timeline given. January 1st. It seems OLA kind of grew out of that 62nd debt, taking some people and the mission focus. And Jim Wold was key in picking the team.
Right. There's that quote about him saying, we don't want any fat faces.
Yeah, meaning he preferred the single-seater A1s. Better visibility, which was critical for flying down low like they did. He handpicked guys like Paul Hooper, Dave Freestad, Bob Carr, his core group.
And he didn't just command them. He mentored them, too. Especially the younger guys.
Sounds like it. He flew with the lieutenants, gave them practical experience, but without the stress of a formal check ride, just building confidence, sharing knowledge. And Bob Carr handled the discipline side, so it was sort of a leadership team.
And you can't forget the ground crews and all this.
Absolutely essential. The transcript makes it clear how dedicated the armorers and mechanics were. They took huge pride in their work, kept track of the unit's successes. Dean Detter gets a specific mention for managing the mechanics effectively. Real teamwork.
But it wasn't without cost. The unit did suffer losses.
Tragically, yes. Glenn Manning died flying into a mountain, and aircraft flown by Detter and Pete Schwanz were lost too. But remarkably, the transcript notes only one man was actually lost while under Jim Wold's direct command.
Which is significant, especially when compared to the unit before OLA.
Yeah, the point is made that the 62nd's loss rate before OLA was apparently much higher. So even though OLA's missions were incredibly risky, maybe their specific tactics or leadership helped mitigate some dangers.
And those tactics often involve flying extremely low. That play cool lesson, stay low if you're already low.
A dangerous necessity for their kind of work. There was even some internal discussion, apparently, about whether those low-altitude tactics were always the best approach compared to higher, faster passes. Jim Wold addressed it in his end-of-tour report.
Oh, interesting. What did his report say? What was his take?
Well, he highlighted the crazy high operational tempo they maintained with pretty limited resources, but he also apparently raised questions about the level of risk. Risk to his air crews, risk to the expensive rescue assets, especially when supporting ground teams in really, really dangerous spots.
So weighing the risks and rewards, thinking critically about the operations.
Exactly. It shows he wasn't just focused on the mission at all costs, but also deeply concerned about his people and the resources. But make no mistake, he was also incredibly proud of what Ola achieved.
You can feel that pride. His son shares a story about the randomness of combat damage, right?
Yeah. And there's another one about Bob Cart checking up on Jim after he flew super low over a bridge and sprang an oil leak. Shows even the top guys were learning, adapting constantly.
It really grounds these larger-than-life stories, doesn't it? Reminds you they were dealing with real dangers, real consequences, learning as they went.
Definitely. That pride in the unit, though, that comes through loud and clear in these recollections from that Jim Wald Day event.
So wrapping this up, Jim Wald, clearly a very respected, very effective leader. He built this incredibly tight, highly skilled, and super secret unit, OLA.
Yeah, a unit doing absolutely crucial work, close air support, rescue in a really tough environment during the war in Southeast Asia.
His leadership style. It seems like it was all about being personally involved, trusting his team implicitly, and being willing to operate where few others would dare.
And this deep dive, looking at that transcript from 2015, it really shines a light on the sheer dedication, the sacrifices made by everyone in OLA, the pilots, the ground crews, stories kept hidden for so long.
It really does make you think, doesn't it, about the weight of that kind of secrecy in military history. How many other stories like OLA's are still out there, untold?
And what can we learn from these personal accounts when they do surface, especially about leadership under that kind of extreme pressure and classification?
It's a compelling thought. What does it really take to lead when the stakes are that high and nobody can know what you're doing?
It definitely makes you appreciate the human element, the individual stories behind the official histories, the different ways people lead and cope in those situations.
Well, if this has piqued your interest, you might want to look into the history of MACV ASOG, maybe the A1 Skyreader aircraft itself, to get more context.
And that book mentioned in the original talk, Firefly by Dick Diller, could offer another angle on that whole period. Worth checking out. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.